This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Guys, welcome to this bonus episode of Pop Kitchen. Thank you so much for joining us. If you haven't already, go and check out episode 124, where we reviewed The Book of Clarence and
Back to Black,
the new Amy Winehouse film directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. So go check that out if you haven't. But today, we're going to be I finally seen Civil War. And if you haven't heard George's review from a couple of weeks ago, go and check that out. Now, I'm going to catch up on my thoughts of it, and I just want to talk about a couple of things relating to some plot details. So if you haven't seen Civil War, please save this conversation until you've seen it, and then come back to this when you don't want to be spoiled. But before we do Civil War, George, the Joker 2 Folie à Deux trailer came out. I think Warner Brothers announced it was their new record for the most views in 24 hours of a trailer drop.
Yes.
A lot of hype around this film. A lot of people are looking forward to this film. I just thought we'd give our thoughts on the trailer. How's it sitting with you?
You know, Joker is a film that you and I feel different things about.
Yeah. And I really want to rewatch Joker actually sooner rather than later.
I agree. I think I might do that.
Should we do it?
Well, because I watched it at the cinema and then I rewatched it about 2 months later, which I still think is pretty close together.
Yeah.
But that was like 4.5 years ago.
Okay.
So I think I'm ready, different place now in my life to see it again.
Mm.
I feel kind of sort of mixed views about Joker as a film. But I have to say, looking at the trailer, it looks very good. It's clearly very, very well made. But also, I'm thinking if Todd Phillips is going to do again what he did with the previous film, which is heavily draw on an influence of cinema. So the last one was heavily Scorsese. This one, heavily drawing on, I want to say, it's all musicals, but Umbrellas of Cherbourg, An American in Paris, kind of like inflected things there, but in a doomy version.
Mm.
I think if you are going to do that with this, you know what? That's even more exciting because that's even more daring because we know how uncertain studios feel about musicals. And I do think there is a stroke of boldness in being like, I made one of the most successful R-rated movies of all time by making it basically a Scorsese movie. Okay, I'll do it again. We'll make it a musical.
The great con of making the art house film, beautiful art house film he wants to make dressed up as a superhero film.
Yeah.
So sure, superhero film, whatever. Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
This is, I'm actually just making paying the biggest homage to the greatest filmmakers of all time and doing it beautifully.
So I think I am actually pleasantly intrigued, and that's why I want to be respectful and go and watch the original again to see if I can, you know, that's not the original.
The original, and looking at this trailer, has this wonderful way of shooting putrid, sickly green color, whether it's a hospital or a therapy session. And there's this opening shot of him behind a cell, and it's gross, but there's this little lens flare, which is the exact color of a clown's makeup just glancing through the thing. Like, Laurence Sher, cinematographer, is great. He talked brilliantly about the use of color in film and how he's used it for Joker, and I'm just really looking forward to seeing them do something with musicals and what looks like them sort of hallucinating on their own stage and dancing in the rain, blue moonlight.
And I think that's even more exciting because that's bolder to really play with what's real, what's not,
and to see
the artifice of stagecraft and the against the artifice of what's going on in your mind.
Yeah. I think Gaga's really well cast as Harley Quinn, again, having not seen the film, but just looking at that, I think she's going to do something really interesting with it. And I'm excited to see sort of narratively what happens next politically in that story, given the reaction to the Joker character.
Yeah.
What happens next?
We see in this trailer him being chased by other Jokers.
Which in Batman, like, Joker has goons that dress up like him and do his bidding. That is the thing that happens.
But also it's just this wonderfully vintage, the blue cop cars of New York City of the 80s. Like, really, the whole look of it is just so intoxicating.
And I
just was reminded about how big that movie was when it first came out.
Yeah.
And how, I mean, Warner Brothers have had probably the most amazing 18 months. They had Barbie, one of the biggest films of all time, right? Then they had Dune Part 2 doing really well for them. That's Warner Brothers. Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Joker coming out later this year. Amazing.
Yeah, huge.
And they don't have a... Do Warner Brothers have a streaming platform? Not the UK, they don't.
No.
I'm thinking of all the big studios.
They must be.
They're raking it in, but
they're not on Paramount or something like that, are they?
Well, no.
They're not merged.
No. Incredible.
We should get on that.
Steve Coogan.
Yeah,
Coogan, I was just like, oh.
Has Stephen Coogan's amazing, like, you know, he's a man of a million voices.
Incredibly
and
talented.
We love him.
Love Steve Coogan.
Is it hard to see him in a serious role now?
Yeah, I want to say no, because I want to be like, Steve, you're clearly incredibly talented guy. You can go do other things. You write, you can direct, you can do serious things. But I think it's not just the fact that he's in a serious film, which he's done before, fine. Mm-hmm. It's the American accent and the slightly hard-boiled genre American accent of being like, what's changed, Arthur? And I feel like you're sat across from Rob Brydon, who's about to return and go, I've been a Joker, Mr. Batman, a very bad Joker.
He's on a real sort of actor's run. You know, he obviously was in that TV series about Jimmy Savile,
yes.
Which I started but never finished, which is like quite a serious role, subject matter. You're seeing him turn up a lot of things.
Baby Cow Productions, his production team do a lot of work. He writes lots, you know, behind things. Obviously, Philomena, which is now like 10 years ago. But yeah, he's been established himself for a long time trying to be as a serious actor in his own right, which is absolutely fair. And I'm sure he's going to be perfectly fine in this movie.
Comedians make some of the best dramatic actors.
They do. Yeah. And I just didn't expect to see him. But like Marc Maron was in the first Joker. Why can't Steve Coogan be in this one? So
I'm excited. I'm really excited for it. But yeah, I think I don't want to actually rewatch Joker a week before I go and see Joker 2.
No.
I think it's going to happen. I should do it. Maybe on a plane I've got coming up.
Why don't you want to watch it too close?
I don't know. I think I don't want to overexpose myself to Joker. I want to rewatch Joker because I like the film and I want to sort of double check on how I'm sitting with it years later. But I also don't want to... I want to just there to have been a bit of space. You can sort of overexpose yourself to something too much. It's not like Dune where you want to sort of catch
brush
up on the writing.
Up on the lore, yeah.
That's like a part one, part two film. This is like a sequel.
Mm. That's coming out on the 10th of... Oh, no, the 4th of October.
Yeah. October 4th.
Yeah.
In theatres and IMAX. They do shoot that on 65mm Alexa LF. That's so gorgeous. Worth seeing on IMAX if you fancy it, but not essential. If
so
that means anything to you.
We'll be discussing more about Joker.
Yeah. And hopefully, I see we could. Should we aim to do a rewatch bonus?
I think that could be quite a nice idea.
Do you want to commit to that?
Yeah.
Should we give ourselves a month? Both got holidays to watch it?
No, I don't want to commit myself to a time. Just between now and the time that the film comes out, basically. That's what I'm saying.
Great. This is what it's like to work with George.
I'm not going to force, you know. I'm not going to watch it under duress. It'll happen.
All right, just
stay tuned at some point, guys.
Just keep listening
for
6 months.
Some point between now and when the film comes out, we'll do a rewatch.
Yeah. All right, should we move on to Civil War?
So I reviewed this last week and...
Yeah, give people a little... please go and check out George's spoiler-free review if you haven't. But George, just your take on Civil War briefly.
So the new movie from Alex Garland, which is set in a sort of present day slash maybe slightly in the future America that is currently in the state of Civil War... surprisingly, actually very much about photojournalists and journalism. I thought the film was broadly interesting, but actually quite disappointing. I felt like it did not engage with the kind of... It baits you with this title of Civil War, and it actually doesn't fulfill that kind of expectation when we're living in a world where America is so divided and so polarized, and it kind of sort of sidesteps that, makes it about journalism, in my opinion. However, some good stuff in it. Really like the third act. James, you know...
It's A24's most expensive movie they've made, $50 million, which for them is a lot. And you can see, you know, there's military things in this, especially in the last half, tanks, lots of big areas that have clearly been sectioned off. And that costs money.
And please fill in any plot details that I've missed in that sort of brief pricing.
Just in case you are not familiar.
Even though this is a spoiler review.
Spoiler review. Near future United States, in the midst of the Civil War, the president, played by Nick Offerman, announces that the defeat of the secessionist Western Front is imminent. He is a president that has forcibly taken a third term. He's disbanded the FBI.
I heard the disband of the FBI. I didn't hear the...
He's forcibly taken...
When is that revealed? The forcibly taken third term?
I think it's like a passing comment. I couldn't tell you when. Okay, like he's in his third term, has disbanded the FBI and executed members of the press in public view. It's like real fascist stuff, right?
But that is, as you say, mentioned in kind of very briefly.
Briefly. Just the fact that he's a president that people aren't happy with, hence Civil War. And we follow a ragtag group of journalists, specifically war photographers, who set out to get an interview, who want to travel to Washington to get an interview with the president, a photograph of him as well, before he is likely going to be executed in the following days as the Western forces are essentially like rolling across the final days of the war. And so we spend our time with experienced and war-weary journalist Kirsten Dunst, and her journalist colleague Joel, played by the great Wagner Moura.
Yeah.
We also have Callie Spaeny, who was brilliant in Priscilla, if you haven't seen that yet, who plays Jesse, a very young-looking, budding photographer who very much is aware of Lee's work and idolises her and ends up linking up with them on their journey to Washington, along with a sort of an older, more experienced journalist as well. And so you end up with this group of unlikely companions going through this war-torn America with abandoned highways and cars and different dangers and all of this kind of stuff. We've got the film is shot on an aspect ratio, which is, I think it's 1.85:1, which is much closer to a full-frame photography sensor, so that when the photos are showed to you, the aspect ratio matches, which is a detail I kind of liked. It's like full-frame photography. So I very much had the thematic misdirection. I was very prepared for that. You prepared it for me. Many people, I was about a week late to see the film. Many people had said, it's not the film you think it is. No. It's actually this war photographer film. It's not civil war, as we know. It's not a war movie. The war happens in the background. I was very ready for that misdirection, that clickbait, if you will. So I saw it with Talia in a busy screening. And Talia she's like, what are we seeing tonight? I was like, do you want to go see Civil War? She's like, what's that about? I'm like, it's a sort of near future dystopian.
Yeah.
You know, she says, great, but hadn't seen a trailer, hadn't seen marketing. And so she saw the film and came out with it, thought, brilliant, 5 stars, phenomenal, really, really interesting. She said, what did you think? And I was like, I'm really mixed, because there's bits about it which I think are really unique and interesting, but so much of it actually sort of slightly irritated me. And that raw impression coming out of the cinema, I was still processing the things that actually left me wanting. And you commented on this as well, funnily enough. You saw it in an official press screening, right? And I just saw it in a regular multiplex. And I told you in the opening of the episode about sort of mishaps with people coming into the film late. But I really did get the sense that the audience was not being taken with this film.
Yeah.
Something that you can't quite articulate. And obviously you can't speak for the 100 people in the room. But rustling, the concentration levels, the film's very quiet and there's moments of music that are intercut with silence. And I think when that happens, you're aware of the frequency energy of the audience. Yeah. And because this film was mismarketed and I think misdirected and mistitled, it attracts people who I think are expecting one thing and have received something else. Yeah. As you said in your review, this isn't the war movie you think it is. It is much more about how the media captures a war. We've got many conversations. And one of the things I like about this film is that it's a really underexplored idea of what it means to capture a war. What does it mean to take a photo of someone who's been set on fire, of who's just been shot, of whose friends are grieving, and to capture it? What moment are you meant to step away? There's, I guess, interesting conversations with Jesse and Lee about what it means to capture something and when should you remove yourself from the situation, this moment where they're sort of flipping between them. So that to me is really interesting. I think Alex Garland in so many scenes clearly understands how to direct tension. Like there's that scene with Jesse Plemons, which I think is a brilliant scene in a vacuum. I'll get on to sort of characters making stupid decisions. So like in a vacuum, I think that's a really great scene that I think engaged everyone. Yeah. But outside of that, it doesn't really make much sense as one moment of tension in a movie that otherwise doesn't have that much. I thought the depiction of modern war in the last third, I actually did find quite unsettling and shocking. You know, scenes of the war we're usually privy to in films is from wars past, and there's a different different way in which like kinetic war moves from 60 to 80 years ago than it does today. When you see troops moving through modern day streets and tanks rolling in, people being dragged out of cars and shot in a very sort of clinical modern weaponry execution way. I do find that quite shocking. Yeah. I did find that quite powerful. The dryness with which it depicts how people would be taken out and executed, I think works. So I think what a lot of people will say is that what I don't like is that the lack of any political standing in this film, really the more it goes on, gets in the way of this film, unfortunately. It's sort of this observation that it refuses to say which side is red or blue or left or right. But someone made a very good point where that the only supporter of the side that is against them the only speaking dialogue part is Jesse Plemons, his character, who's great in this, but he happens to be a white nationalist and he's the only person that speaks. So actually, you're not being apolitical. Yeah. You're indulging in this other side and painting a very faint allusion to a certain side in modern politics, but not really tackling it.
Yeah.
So on one hand, I'm going, what an interesting statement on capturing media and war photography, but confusing, misdirection.
Yeah.
I think you said it's sort of, its observations are actually a little bit surface and a little bit pedestrian. And I can't help but agree. But I do feel like it's made with good intentions and made with someone who's really smart, who wants to make a statement. But the film is just ultimately a little bit confusing to watch.
Do you agree with what I said? Is like it never made me think.
Yeah, a little bit.
It never really got me thinking about...
The war photography stuff made me think, and, you know, just moving into spoilers now, the death of Kirsten Dunst and Callie Spaney's character sort of becoming more accomplished as a photographer and really coming into her own. And
becoming hooked.
Coming hooked and addicted, and they're into this war zone. And it's actually Lee that starts to get really stressed and overwhelmed with war. When it got to the final moments and, you know, I didn't find the death of Lee interesting because it was just Jesse doing a stupid decision that made Kirsten Dunst have to jump out in front of her and she dies. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I know.
I wasn't like blown away by that ending and the final photograph that's taken of Nick Offerman. I see that moment, I go, well, that was a stupid decision. Yeah. So like in the beginning of the film, I think these journalists are really competent. I'm like, these people know about this war-torn America. They're really aware of the dangers that come across. And they start to make really stupid decisions. Huh. In the scene before the Jesse Plemons scene, they meet up with these characters that we've never met before and do some really stupid decisions. And all of a sudden, people are behaving like absolute morons. Yeah. If I was Kirsten Dunst driving that car in that scene, I would have slammed the brakes and be like, what the hell are we doing? Yeah. Stop right now. But Jesse, for no reason, jumps into the other car, and while characters are separated, and we end up in that Jesse Plemons scene, and I go, well, of course, that was really stupid decision-making in a war-torn America. And then we get these two characters, which we've just been introduced to.
You do see them briefly at the hotel. Briefly. But
they've been introduced just so they can get executed in the scene, because we don't want to kill any of our main characters. Yeah. So while that's a really great scene, I'm like...
The two/three people that get killed are, minority,
non-white characters. Which I guess, again, you're indulging in that white supremacist angle for that.
And also, if I may, just not indulge in the logic of a fictional white nationalist, but the fact that he spared Wagner Moura's character just because he said he was from Florida, even though Wagner Moura is clearly a Latino character. Yeah. I know it's stupid to engage.
It's stupid.
That, but...
And like again, a cool scene. I think Jesse Plemons is brilliant. Like he's one of my favorite actors working. And like that whole idea of you're meeting people in a war state. In the middle of nowhere without a witness. And the older journalist is like, my advice is these people do not want to be seen what they're doing. They are piling bodies off the back of a truck. Lots of like horrifying Holocaust imagery of burying things. Jesse Plemons is wearing these red glasses, which could also be like politically red, but seeing the world through a completely different lens. There's a horrible playfulness to like contrast with his violence. Great scene. But I started to think that these characters aren't actually that smart and competent, which really annoyed me after that scene. I was like, that was such a stupid decision.
Yeah.
And then later when that death happens, I'm not like, wow, photography. She did what she had to do to get the photo. I'm like, okay.
I agree. That scene with Jesse Plemons, tense as it is, the way it ends, which is just Steve McKenna just driving a car.
Yeah.
I was like, that's quite dumb because you would actually hear that car coming and you would have time to jump out of the way. Why did she, who is knelt sat on the floor, have more time to jump out of the way than Jesse Plemons did, who was stood and alert.
Conveniently stood in a way that
I know I'm overthinking it, but I'm just like, that's actually not a great end to that scene. When Kirsten Dunst's character gets killed at the end, I agree with you. I think it would have been more powerful if Jesse would have been killed. And it's like,
I said that to Tyler on our walk home. I said you should have killed Jesse.
Yeah, because it's like you play with fire, you get burned.
Also, like she's shooting on film as like a basic photography thing, which is totally cool. But she's established to be like an amateur photographer who's picked up her dad's camera, who's trying to learn how to take photos. In a war zone.
Yeah.
Anyone who's tried to learn photography before know it like takes quite a while to like practice and learn and fail, especially with film where you're not going to expose things properly. And she biffs up like a whole roll of film, but let alone in a war zone, and especially in the last third. And she's just like, oh, I'm taking great pictures now. I'm like, are you sure you're exposing this film correctly? Do you not just want to get a digital camera and just like nail it? But anyway, that kind of bothered me. But.
I do think that last third, once they get to Washington, started to really feel quite electric and exciting.
Tense, really great tension.
Unfortunately, I don't feel the thematic stakes are very high, but I did feel like it was, I was watching a piece of history. Like this did feel like the fall of a massive empire. I just wish it meant more for me. But isolated, that final third, I was like, oh, this is pretty exciting.
You always want to be like, stop. It's an art house movie just being dressed up as something else. It's like, just maybe make a different movie. Go full Roland Emmerich and blow up the White House.
Yes.
And make a different film.
Or don't even invite the expectation of Civil War. Just make it really, really stripped down. Because like war photography and journalism is great. And is interesting, but also the insights that it has here. You know that bit where they see the burnt out helicopter in the shopping car park, and she's like, "It would make a great shot." Yeah, and I think if you did this, like it's some sort of superpower. Yeah.
As a photographer, it made me want to go get my camera, not to photograph a war, but just like the idea of capturing things and finding moments. It's a real photographer's film. You don't really get many films about that and war. So on one hand, I'm like, this is interesting. This is catching people off guard in a way that some people really like. I've had multiple people DM me this week saying, oh, I loved Civil War. Can't wait to hear what you think about it. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting because I'm hearing completely different things. And I've had someone else DM me saying, what a shame.
Yeah.
And then I've seen reviews online, Mix. I've seen TikTok clips of Mix. You come in with your review. Talia leaves the cinema and says she thinks it's brilliant and interesting and phenomenal. And I don't take that away from her. She also didn't see the trailer and just came in fresh, which is probably the best way to experience the film. So...
And the needle drops, did you find them as annoying?
Yeah, I don't think that annoying. I think I got it.
Upbeat pop song for a horrific image. Yeah, I've seen that before.
I got it. I think the sound, there's moments of sound design which I think are quite well done. I think the structure of the photograph comes in and all the sound cuts out and you're just left with the image of the photo that's unassisted by what's happened before and after it. I think is important. It made me think about how photography can actually be sometimes a very inaccurate way to capture a moment in time, because you don't see what came before and you don't see what came afterwards, and really video is what shows you the real context for a moment in time.
I'm almost someone, I did see a really, really scathing review that was like, I would rather have read the coffee table book photo album of all the photos that are taken in this movie than actually have watched the movie. It would have been more interesting to flick through the fictional war photography than actually watch the 2 hour thing.
I also like the whole conceptualization of Jesse as a character turning up in a war zone with a camera she doesn't know how to use. I'm like, well, where have you come from?
Yeah.
And why are you here? I know you like photography, but you've just randomly joined this photographer, knowing the risk you're going. And also a bad decision. If I was Lee, I would have been like, sorry, I don't know you. I'm not going to allow you to just come car.
She does protest.
Yeah.
But also then I was with Wagner Moore's character. I'm like, are you trying to sleep with her?
Yeah, there was a little bit of that.
But I'm like, because I want to like you, but I also then, if you're trying to sleep with this young woman, take advantage of her, you know, ambition, then...
Yeah.
Well...
So I feel very mixed.
Yeah,
there's parts of it that are definitely interesting and actually do stick with me. But it just doesn't feel like it's got to the heart of what what we were looking for. And it really is in the background, literally in scenes. You see it there.
Do you know what I mean? But also that shot of the snipers in the Statue of Liberty isn't in the film.
No, not in the film.
And the shot of the poster of all the helicopters going over the Hudson River, I don't think is in the film.
I don't think I've seen that poster. Yeah.
Oh, you were. It's the main poster with all the Civil War. Right, Chinooks. Okay. It's like the attack helicopters flying over an orange skied New York. It's a Civil War. It's just not. Yeah. Anyway, that was Civil War. That was our spoiler thoughts there. I think. We feel the same way. Unfortunate disappointment. But we have
the action. Sorry, is when they're storming into the White House and they're going through the rooms,
which feels like a level of
the Oval
Call
Office.
Of Duty, Modern Warfare.
Totally. Which you probably shouldn't.
No,
because Call of Duty is also not really.
Let's
politically deep.
No,
but
exactly.
There's undoubtedly great tension. Like, you know, like people like checking cover and going around.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
this
very
is
tense.
Really
that's my point.
Tense.
In isolation, that's why I liked the third act. But I wish it was grounded.
And there's something
in more
there about
stakes.
Understanding the people that are literally everyone else is shooting guns and they are shooting film.
Yeah.
That's an interesting image. I
wanted it to play it more. I think they could have done more with the fact that they're shooting other Americans. That discussion about the people that you're shooting who did become very faceless. There's that one bit, I suppose, with the Secret Service agent towards the end where she's like, I'd like to negotiate the president to leave, and they just shoot her.
And also like Jesse Plemons' line of what type of American are you?
Yeah.
That can really be explored of like, what is America? How do we decide what an American is now?
Anyway, we have some emails about Civil War. This is from Taha, who talks on about Civil War and says, primarily, I enjoyed this film, especially its characters and the action sequences. However, I agree with George that the film gives you such an interesting world and then refuses to really explore it. I feel it had such a good method to tell its story through the photojournalists, but never went beyond basic criticisms of war is bad. In the end, while I was captivated by the final action sequence, like us, I left the cinema feeling that the only reason the film was set in America is because Alex Garland thinks that Americans just cannot understand the horror and consequences of war unless it happens directly to them. Maybe. Side note, I'm curious if James had any nitpicks related to the photography aspects.
Not really, only that film photography is really hard, and if you don't know how to do it, and you're in a... like just doing film photography in a park... is difficult if you're not really experienced, let alone storming the Oval Office to execute the president. I think you would bring a little also, Kodak point and shoot as a backup.
Do you not think as well that when they shoot the president and then this needle drops and the movie ends and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And also the way that she dies, she pushes Jesse out of the way.
But stands, yeah.
And then just stands there. It's like, no, you would rugby tackle and get to the ground. I mean, it's stupid, but the thing, when a film is not working for you, you get more pulled out by the logical inaccuracies.
It's in slow motion as well.
Yeah. This next email from Cameron about Civil War says, good day to you both. We'll get the smoke blowing up the proverbial bum out of the way, and congratulations on my favourite film podcast. On Civil War, I actually really enjoyed this film, but I had literally just pressed go on my IMAX booking when you guys expressed reservations on bothering to see this on the big, big screen. And I thought, well, shit, there goes 20 quid. But having now seen it in that environment, I do think it was an all-around gripping cinema experience. However, again, having listened to the pod before going in, one thing stuck in my mind. There was one device that consistently drew me out of the film, which was the continuous needle drops on moments that seemed so out of place. There are three key moments where Garland thumbed in a track to try and contrast the horror of what was going on screen, and that didn't feel like it was earned, and it was jarring. In particular, stealing a moment of what would have been a sublime character breakdown from Wagner Moura. So my question to you is, as music has the ability to completely change the emotional reaction to a scene, what would be your favourite examples? Ooh. I'll start with one, which is Ride of the Valkyries in Apocalypse Now. Sincerely, he signs off Bertie Slippers, but your name is Cameron. I don't know why you put Bertie Slippers in there. I don't know what that means. So that's a good question about best needle drops in movies. Anyone follows the social media channel, you'll notice that I had spoke with the director of a new movie called The Greatest Hits, Ned Benson. That movie's all about... movie sound, it's all about music, and I asked him what his favorite movie needle drops were, and you can check those out on Instagram and TikTok. But James, did you have some?
A recent very good example is PIMP by 50 Cent in Anatomy of a Fall.
That's the specific music
instrumental version of it. Yeah, that was really good. Always Be My Baby in Bo is Afraid. I don't even want to think about that scene, but in the deep in the fifth act of Bo is Afraid, there's like a sex scene with Always Be My Baby, and it's really strange, but changed that song for me forever.
I think my favorite is always Goodbye Horses by Q Lazarus in Silence of the Lambs, because that song is great song, and also it fits the whole mood of that moment really well. But also Q Lazarus, as far as I'm aware, didn't make any other songs. They made that one song. And I'm like, I love this. It comes in, great song, fits the mood completely perfectly. It's creepy, works, it's a bop, and then it just stops. Also, a recent example, the film was flawed, but Love Lies Bleeding, there's a really great use of a Gina X performance track in that.
Classic American Psycho, Huey Lewis and the Blues.
Oh, Sussudio in that as well. Yeah, actually great use of music in that all around. Those are our emails on Civil War.
Spider-Man 3, Tobey Maguire scene. Killing the vibe.
That's actually great track. That's people get up and do my thing by James Brown.
It's what's happening on the screen.
Anyway, there we are. That brings us to the end.
Would you be interested? Like, I left the theatre thinking, God, I'd love to have known about how, you know, the president got into that, you know, theory to the elongated third term, executed the FBI. That's more interesting in my head, I think. And then I'm going, but do I want that? Is that going to be too much of a square analysis of a polarized America? Because I look at that, I go, God, that's so interesting. How does fascism evolve, given that whatever you think about the political state of the US right now and democracy, do I want that now?
Yeah.
I think I do.
Yeah.
But would it be crap? Well, would it not work?
I think it would. I think they should give it a try. He should have given it more of a try, like, probably. I don't know. I'm done with it. I'm over it.
I'm over it. He's over the war.
Anyway, that was Civil War.
Let us know your thoughts, as always. Lots of people have very different opinions on this film, so as always, be great to hear many different opinions. Send them in to hello@popculturepodcast.com and we will read them out on the show.
And speaking of the show, don't forget we post regular episodes every single Wednesday. And if you haven't listened to episode 124 yet, where we reviewed Back to Black and Book of Clarence, go do it. If not, see you next week for another lovely episode of our show.
Oh, look at you getting all radio-y.